So we begin in Woodville, Mississippi. May 11th, 1895 is when he was born. His mother was a school teacher, and his father actually died when he was about 3 months old, so he never really got to know his father. His mother remarried, and she moved to Little Rock, Arkansas. In his teenage years, he started playing violin, which became one of his main instruments for the early part of his life, and heavily influenced in his works. If you listen, he's got his suite for violin, and his second symphony's got a beautiful violin solo in the middle of the first movement. And he graduates high school at the age of 16. So at the age of 16, he goes to Wilberforce University because his mother wanted him to study pre-med, and he went in as a pre-med major and started spending more time around the music department and learning things. He actually played in the Wilberforce String Quartet when he was there, so he was first violinist in the quartet, and slowly but surely he made the switch to music, and he actually switched universities. He went to Oberlin, and he studied with some great composition faculty there. Chadwick was one of his main teachers there.
Oberlin's not too far from where we are right now. It's down in Ohio.
Yes. Short travel, I guess, from Wilberforce, also in Ohio, to Oberlin. So he does that for a while. And he takes a break of Oberlin in 1918. He joins the Navy as a mess hall attendant, which was the only position that he could get in the Navy, being an African-American man. For 1 year exactly, he worked for the Navy. And then at the end of that year, he comes back to Oberlin for just a moment to finish up some things and to do some more work there. Then he gets a break by moving to New York, where he works for W.C. Handy, one of the big music publishers at the time. So this is when he gets his break into arranging and getting paid. One of his most famous arrangements he did there was the St. Louis Blues. He arranged it for a military band, which is pretty cool to see him doing that and to getting to do things, something that he really loves to do.
I think of W.C. Handy as a jazz player, pianist.
Yeah.
He wrote the St. Louis Blues, but he was looking for highly educated musicians who could expound his music to other areas.
Yes, and that's what William did when he was there. He, you know, took his pieces and made them accessible to a lot of different people, and he also played in his band when he was there. So in 1930, now we come to, is when he gets his first major symphony, the Symphony Number 1, the African American Symphony, which is one of my favorite pieces of all time. And I will tell you why. It contains so many different elements of Americana, right? So we have a blues element. The first movement starts with this great English horn solo. He was an oboe player professionally later in his life. He played the oboe. He took this nice English horn solo, and it sets up this nice 12-bar blues form for this entire first movement of the symphony. So the whole movement is basically set up in a 12-bar blues, and then the third movement, he selects elements of jazz, right? So the third movement is very fast, very upbeat, but it has lots of jazz qualities to it, nice close harmonies in it, and it also contains a little tag in the horn line, better known as "I've Got Rhythm" by George Gershwin, which, okay, funny story, William Grant Steele claims to have written this melody while improvising during a show he was playing in. George Gershwin happened to be in attendance. It was like kind of a cabaret type thing, musical type thing he was playing. And the performers, to keep their parts from getting boring, they would often improvise some of the things.
That's really interesting.
Has stolen this this little tag, right? Ba-dum, ba-dum, be-da-dee-da. Yeah, like you can hear that very clearly in the horn line throughout this movement. So it's pretty crazy. So we have this this like Americana element, right? So we got the blues and the jazz, 1 and 3. And then movements 2 and 4 are what I call kind of the heavy movements of the symphony. So they're the symphony, the African-American, it's supposed to be talking about the plight of the African-American, you know, in the United States, right? So this is, you know, the name was not an afterthought. Actually, Duke University has a great collection of a lot of his diary entries and a lot of, you know, letters and things that he wrote. Like, anything you could ever want to read about William Grant Steele, Duke University has a great collection. So is the University of Arkansas as well. One of the things that I was reading was a diary entry where he's talking about this symphony, and he even names it from the beginning when he's working on it, the African American Symphony. So this is a very, very much in the forefront of his mind when he's creating this. So the second movement is a nice adagio. It almost has kind of a, I want to say, slave song type feel to it. It's very, very somber, and it makes you almost want to cry, kind of. It's just very sad and deep and moving. And the fourth movement contains those elements as well, kind of like, where do we go from here kind of a feeling is what I get from it. And it's really interesting to hear it. The fourth movement especially, you have this this very slow melody, and it kind of builds up into this really climactic ending with this, you know, hugely orchestrated, and it's, you know, large and wonderful. This is one of my favorite pieces, William Grant Steele, just because it has so many different elements of American life in it, and he still tells his story at the same time, you know, or he gets the point across he's trying to get across.
William Grant Steele writes his symphony in 1930, right around the time jazz and classical music were getting together and having a lot of fun cross-fertilization experiments.
Yeah, this is the exact same era we're talking about. You know, it's interesting, one of the other powerhouses of jazz, right? So Duke Ellington was born 5 years after William Grant Steele. So, or 4 years after, excuse me. So, you know, they're living in the same time, they're writing at the same time. And these elements are kind of cross-pollinating, with New York being the cultural epicenter that it is. You get that kind of mix of culture, and, you know, it's represented very well in music. That's something that I think he benefited from, having come from the South, then to move to New York and get this cultural mix with jazz and be introduced to these new kind of rhythms and things and see all these other people play. And then, in 1935, he gets a Fulbright Award, which moves him to Los Angeles. And he begins to write for film and television. So he becomes kind of more of a commercial composer. And at the same time, continuing with his own pieces, this period between 1930 and 1941 are his most prolific years in his compositions. So he puts out a lot of compositions. We get chamber music works from him. We get full orchestrated works, works for chorus. Also works for soloist and orchestra, right? So 1939, his second wife, actually, Verna Arvey, who is a fairly well-known pianist of Russian Jewish descent. Their marriage was kind of interesting at the time, being married in 1939. She actually premiered several of his works for piano. She became actually not only one of his main duet partners, but she also helped finish the libretto for his opera Troubled Island, which Langston Hughes was writing the libretto for at the time, and he had to leave the country for a while. And she wrote three pieces for three of the movements for the opera.
So this is a very successful, prolific time for him.
Definitely, definitely. And then he's becoming much more well-known, and he's had these great successes with different pieces. 1945, he writes the Festive Overture, and that wins first prize in the Cincinnati Symphony's Jubilee Season Competition, right? Major American Orchestra performing his music, so that's a great thing. Around this time, he also becomes the first African-American to conduct a major United States orchestra with the New Orleans Philharmonic.
Well, from what you're describing, he's had an amazingly successful career. He's happily married to another musician. Were there any unexpected bumps in the road or difficulties?
Nothing unexpected. Between 1945 and the time of his death in 1968, he gets awarded numerous honorary doctorates from places like the New England Conservatory, Oberlin, his old alma mater, the University of Arkansas, which houses a collection I was talking about earlier, and many other universities. His opera, Bayou Legend, was actually posthumously, in 1981, premiered on PBS. And that was the first opera of an African-American composer to be televised. So even posthumously, he's setting the bar very high. One of the great things that that the Duke University Collections does is created a timeline, right, of all his major events from life, from the beginning of his life to his death. And it juxtaposes this to other major events in the United States, specifically musical events. So it has lots of great examples to help you kind of understand where he fits into the musical timeline of our country. And that's really interesting.
I guess part of that musical timeline would be all the John Cages and George Crumbs and the atonal composers coming up at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's something you really won't find in William Grant Still's music. It's very lyrical and tonal.
Yes, it's he's very much a fan of the melody. And he takes these melodies and makes beautiful, beautiful works out of them. And I think that's something that was kind of lost in classical music. But I'm glad it lives on in William Grant Still's music.
Certainly. Well, John, I'm really happy to see that you brought your viola along today, and you're going to play us a piece by William Grant Still.
Yes, so this piece is called Here's One, and it's his arrangement of a spiritual. It really shows his connection to that type of music, having been, born in the South and lived in Arkansas for a while. It really shows that he has a strong connection to the African-American people and the plight, again, of the people that he was trying to portray in his first symphony can very well be heard here in this spiritual and his arrangement of it.
Well, this is very exciting. John Boyd, regular contributor to WMUK's Let's Hear It, and violist playing music of William Grant Still with pianist J.J. Treadway.